Today's episode is brought to you by Foot Cardigan. Do you wear socks? Do you have feet? Well, then this ad is for you. Let me tell you what Foot Cardigan is. Basically, it's a sock subscription service. You can get them for yourself. You can get them for your friend. You can get them for an enemy, okay? The deal is this. Every month, you get a new sock, and you get 10% off if you use our offer code. All right, so go to footcardigan.com, enter in feet, F-E-E-T, 3. That's feet 3 with the number 3 at checkout, and your life will be changed forever because your feet are warm and you'll live forever. Probably. Today's episode is brought to you by our friends at Squarespace. Here's the deal. Ever have an idea? Ever want to make a website out of that idea? Do you have a business? Want to make a website? Well, Squarespace is for you. It is a beautiful interface with elegant designs, okay? I'm using it right now to create my own website. That's right. It's going to be on Squarespace. So check it out. I'm using it, and you can use it too. I use their 24/7 customer support, and they're fucking the best. Try Squarespace at squarespace.com and enter the offer code BONKERS. That's B-O-N-K-E-R-S at checkout for 10% off. Squarespace. Build it beautifully. Hey everybody, before we start the show, just wanted to let you know that I will be at CineFamily in Los Angeles on March 6th presenting a very special screening of Ghostbusters. That's right, 35mm print. Come out, see it. I have some special clips I want to show, and it'll be a super fun night. Wayne Fetterman's Film Festival, and it's at CineFamily in LA. Very exciting event. Check that out. Here we go. The gun is still good. The penis is still evil. June Diane Raphael saw Zardoz, so you know what that means.
Schwarzenegger grow a baby in his belly, rock a rhinestone vest while whipping Justin to Kelly, or maybe see a burlesque show with Nick Crow and take a boat with speed to hitting cruise control. J-Man, Big Paul in the beautiful June, gonna take you from the goob all the way to the room. Randy Games and Street Fighter helped to blow off steam, just a sucker punch the odd life of Timothy Green. Sharknado the Birdemic, how we staying alive, they call it in the badass and he's on the line cranking 88 minutes cause they cool as ice, cause the bad Jim Varney looking kind of nice. Paul and June getting literal. Jason is getting laid. June is making sure all the monkey shots getting paid. They judge a bunch of movies while they're making the grade. Here's a real question for you. How did this get made?
Hello, people of Earth. I am Paul Scheer, joining you for a very special episode of How Did This Get Made. It is a two-parter. The first time that we have ever done a two-parter in the history of How Did This Get Made, because there's so much movie that needs to be talked about, and the person who didn't get a chance to talk about it last time was, of course, June Diane Raphael. How are you, June?
I'm good. How are you, Paul?
Very good. So this is a very exciting episode because it's basically, you've heard us talk about Zardoz.
I did listen to the episode, yes.
And there's a lot of things that I think you want to say, that things that we may not have covered, rebuttals to things that we might have said, a lot of things across the board. You've had more time to ferment in your experience of Zardoz.
Well, it's interesting because I did, after watching the movie, so I watched the movie that day we were supposed to record. Then I couldn't do it. We tried to Skype me in. It was a disaster. So since then, I've forgotten the entire plot of the movie.
Yeah, because it kind of goes in one ear and out the other ear with you on these movies. Like, I would argue that you don't remember any movie that we've ever done on this podcast.
I don't.
Okay, yeah. And that's why you have to watch every movie that we do the day of, because it's in and out. It's like a drive-thru window at McDonald's.
But I feel like I'm in the moment of them when they're happening, but then I also feel like I shouldn't hold all of these things in my head.
No, let it go. Let it go.
Yeah. It's too much insanity to just, like, keep it around.
I hear
so
that.
I didn't remember anything. So I was listening to the episode tonight before this episode, before I knew we were going to record this, because again, I didn't want too much time to lapse.
Yeah.
And I was shocked. I was remembering all of it all over again, and yet forgetting it too.
Yeah, of course. It's a lot to take in. This movie is, it's a big movie. A lot of ideas in this movie.
Yeah, but I think, like, if you are going to watch this movie, you're going to walk away from it with more of just a feeling than anything else.
Wow. Interesting.
You know, you're not going to walk away.
What feeling did you walk away? Because I started off the last episode by saying, this movie makes me nauseous, is something that you said during watching this movie.
Okay, so the feeling I had when I was watching this movie was that I have this distinct memory growing up of I so wanted to watch TV all the time, and it was never available to me, and I was so just wanting to watch programs that I wanted to watch, and
programs?
You know,
you became an old lady when you were a child. Your programs were not. I like that Punky Brewster program.
I wanted to watch like Facts of Life and Sweet Valley High and all of those programs. And I feel like whenever my parents were home, I would walk past the kitchen because we only had a TV in our kitchen, and a movie like this was on.
Okay.
Like that's the feeling I had when I saw the movie of like, this was always on, and I would sit and I would watch it because I wanted to watch TV, but I would hate what I was watching and it looked so dated to me. I just wanted to see like the gang from Facts of Life or Small Wonder or something.
So
and I would be
old.
Forced to watch this. And that was the feeling.
I understand that. So like your aversion or people's aversion maybe to black and white films as a child, like this is your
version.
Yeah,
like this felt like it because it wasn't. It was dated even then, but
right.
Like it was.
Well, I mean, it's pretty futuristic.
It just felt like this was always on. This was the movie that was always on that I didn't want to see.
So that's how you're entering into it. You're entering into it as this. Would you say that that's all 70s movies?
No,
because this
no,
is not
not
very
at all.
Similar. I mean, I get what you're
but
saying.
See, this is 70s that's futuristic, though. This is a different thing.
Okay.
But I mean, yeah, I didn't, you know, it just wasn't what I mean, I'm talking about when I was like in sixth grade
no,
and
I
fifth
get what you're
grade.
Saying.
So
I
I'm sure there were
saying.
Some amazing movies on that I hated, too, because I just didn't want to watch them.
You want to see like, you know, Blair and Joe,
just
kind of get
the gang,
into it. Yeah.
You know, so.
Run that candy store with George Clooney.
So that's what I felt. So that's that was like the overall feeling
okay.
for me.
Entering in already upset that you have to watch it. And it's an hour and 55 minutes, so it's long.
Yeah. And
it was postponing us both from watching The Bachelor, so even longer.
Yes. And you always say, which you know you do,
mm-hmm.
this one's a short one. It's only going to be, you know.
Yeah. I didn't say it this time. Though.
You didn't. And I was glad because I went in knowing like we're in for this. That said, I really enjoyed the movie.
There you go. Look at
and
that.
And I'm so glad I saw it.
Yeah.
And I really liked it quite a bit. I don't remember any of it.
Well, you have your notes here, don't you?
Yeah.
Your notes. All right. Well, let's kind of talk about things because we did talk about the... I said to you, I think that this movie is very sexual and people are very sexy. And you were kind of repulsed by that thought.
Yes. That is something I want to talk about because it seemed the whole, all of the guys felt that way.
Yeah. We did find Charlotte Rampling to be very like erotic.
Okay. I have to say that the clothing in this movie, those ill-fitting tops that were, I mean, Jason described them as though they were sexy. And like, to me, watching those women horseback ride without bras on with those shirts on just made me feel like ouch, 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 ouch.
Wait, so you were concerned about their boobs
it
being
hurt,
hurt in
it
horse
hurt.
Riding season?
Well, it did. I can promise you it hurt.
So that makes the movie not
no
sexy.
It was just the,
so like
the
Bo
thing,
Derek
the,
and the, Ten the riding thing, on the beach.
No, the thing about those shirts was that it was like they weren't loose.
Okay.
But they weren't tight.
Okay.
They were somewhere in between and the neckline was so upsetting to me. So upsetting. If I think about the way they were tied weirdly and the
this
men
is the
were wearing
that's
them
coming like the one that's leading you
yes.
is the tops of the women on horse. I don't even remember women riding horses in this
Charlotte
movie.
Was riding horses a bunch. Everybody was riding horses at one point.
Okay.
Remember she's looking for him when he's
oh,
with
yes.
the apathetics
mm-hmm.
and she's riding around on that horse.
Yeah.
And she's bouncing around and it doesn't, I don't know. To me, that's not sexy. That's just painful.
Okay. Well, what about the scenes when
I would almost prefer it, honestly, if she had been topless.
Okay. But that would also be painful.
Yes, but seeing how close it was to support and not being support was more painful for me to watch.
So the idea that you would have a shirt that be like, oh, thank God this shirt's going to support me.
I thought everybody looked terrible. Terrible.
What about, I mean...
And I have to say, too, there's something to me about the idea of being immortal
mm-hmm.
and all of these women, I know everybody like got big old boners for the ladies in this yeah. movie. To me, the idea of all these women being immortal made them so unsexy to me.
Okay, I'm here just to facilitate you, so I'm going to ask why.
Well, I mean, I think they got into this bigger idea in the movie.
But why unsexy? Because they're too old?
No, it had nothing to do with their age. It was just there was no light behind their eyes.
Well,
they were
they
just
stopped
so,
having sex.
I understand. But that's but that, not having any sort of like lifeblood in them and not having any energy, to me it was like just so gross.
But
they were
that,
gross.
Isn't it kind of like that cliche of like then the hairy man comes
but
in?
I never
and
saw
he,
them
like,
really ignited, I guess.
Not in that scene when she looks at his boner? After she shows him, no. You didn't feel the pack. I will agree with you. I don't know if they had a chemistry.
No, they didn't. And I felt he had a boner for her, but I never felt
that it was reciprocated. But didn't you feel like he would maybe have a boner for anyone? Like, I felt like his boner was at all times ready
to
go.
I guess I had a little bit of an issue with this idea of like, oh, they're barbarians too. So they rape women. Okay. But then it was like, oh, well, they don't just rape women because they, like, why are they, this is, I guess, an honest question. Why are they raping an elderly woman?
I mean, you're like,
that was just so horrifying. Well,
I mean,
I have to say,
yeah,
this is the one thing about the movie. I wish I hadn't seen that. I really wish I hadn't seen that because that I have forgotten everything about Zardoz and the tabernacle and the
crystal rings.
All of that stuff. But that image is forever with me. And I regret that.
Putting a rope around the woman, a rope neck kind of out of Thundercats and raping.
Well, there was
woman.
That. But then there was the old. Do you remember the elderly woman?
Oh, yeah. I do.
Elderly.
That. Let's talk about Sean Connery's body. We discussed it was a 70s. Body.
Yeah, and I actually agreed with that.
Yeah. You liked that.
No, I didn't like watching it. Again, a lot of people were running around to me with very little support.
Yeah. He had a lot of support, though. It seemed like that red diaper was almost too... I mean, it seemed like there was a lot going on there. I feel like any man is always going to pad up his junk. Like Neil Patrick Harris on the Oscars last night when he was in underwear, it was almost grotesquely padded.
I didn't notice.
Okay.
Where are you gay?
If I was, would that be a problem?
Actually, yes, it would be.
Okay, well, let's table that for a later discussion. Off air. Can we talk about this off air, please? All right, take out your notebook. I want you because
I have all of these are, believe me,
just read me a thing and I can see if I can jog your memory here.
Well, this is, we've already discussed this, but it must have been hard to ride horseback without bras.
Yeah, okay. Leading strong. I will read something else. Okay. I want to do you. There's a million
notes
here.
Who has been keeping up his mustache?
That. I think that may be the best way to go through this. Okay. So you were worried about his grooming.
Well, no. I was just wondering, like, he's a barbarian.
Right.
Like, he's got long hair. How's he shaving and, like... Do you remember when you got that gentleman's shave from that guy in New York?
Yes.
Who gave you like a really distinguished shave?
Yes.
That is what he had.
He did have a very...
It was like a distinguished, very sculpted...
Just for the people listening, I didn't like that distinguished shave. I was forced into it. And then I had this weird like stubble, very articulated stubble, which you can see online if you Google Bride Wars premiere Paul Scherer. I'm also like really fat back then too.
You're not. You look great. I think it looks great in the pictures, but I do agree it was like a little too...
It was way too cured.
You looked very distinguished and like a little ornery.
The man had a giant trophy by his barber chair. I shouldn't be getting a cut. Well, regardless.
Can you just tell our listeners how much that cost?
I was in New York. I lived in New York. I had a place to go get my hair cut. We were in a little bit of a bind. And instead of just like running down to a barber, I asked the concierge at a very fancy hotel, where should I get my hair cut? And he's like, oh, here, we have a great barber.
The Plaza.
And I got my hair cut by this barber who literally had a trophy to his left, a giant trophy. Almost, it looked like the world on a giant pedestal. And he told me that he won the Barber of the World Award. And he told me all about this. And at that point, I started to realize, oh, this is going to be a very expensive haircut.
And it was.
It was $120. Now, I don't know if you guys are familiar with my hairstyle, but you don't need $120 to cut this hair. Like, if I don't have a flowing mane, I don't even have, you know, that's the way it goes. I don't need a $120 haircut. $100 haircut, totally fine with. $120, obscene. So anyway, yes, he was very well manicured.
He was very well manicured. And I'm not sure how long all this, well, I don't know how long, like, the entire course of the movie, like, what was the length of time that we were
witnessing? Well, he was always a barbarian when we first see him.
No, I know, but once he got to...
Zardoz. Oh, well, it's not Zardoz, but whatever that land. Yeah, the Enlightened Land. Okay, probably at least a week.
Oh, I see. I thought he was there for a lot longer. Okay.
I mean, again, time is relative.
But again, even when he was a barbarian, he still had a very well manicured stash.
Okay, read another note from your book. You have like 5 pages of notes.
I have 2. Oh, I said, you know what? I did like that women in this society played a very prominent role. Even though I know you guys said, oh, this movie's so misogynist, blah blah blah. But in this futuristic world, they're the leaders of this weird community.
Okay, so you like the women? You like the women are playing a strong role.
Well, I felt like that was a choice. Like, okay. In the future, because that's not the way it is now. But once we get to whatever year this is,
I want to ask
the women are gonna, you know. And I know what Brett was saying about like, oh, this is the female world is neutered and
like basically not sexual. The movie is maybe saying the female world is bad.
Yes. Yes.
So you like it just because at least they're in power. You don't like, even though it's that it's.
Well, you asked me to just read my notes.
I am.
These are sequential notes, so I'm not sure where I was.
Okay, I'm not asking you to defend it. I'm just saying, but you know.
Well, there's something to I'm realizing, and I think the reason why I said I felt nauseous was there was something, and I guess the movie was successful in this way. Something about the idea of eternal life that made me feel really creepy.
You didn't want it.
I don't want it.
Interesting. Interesting. We're going to get into that in a second.
And by the way, like, that's the question the movie brings up. Like, do you want it? Do you want it?
I mean, that's a very heady
question.
And
so many times I think, of course I do. Like, I don't think there's enough time on this earth for me. But
what if there was... See, the interesting thing was they were surrounded by their peers. Like, that's just not you having eternal life. They weren't able to find happiness even surrounded by their peers.
Yeah.
It seems like they just didn't know how to have fun. I mean, they're only around for 300 years. You think that they wouldn't have worn off by then.
I know, but the basic, you know, you guys didn't really get into this, but the basic idea is just like, well, if you have forever, does anything mean anything? You know, if... You don't.
That is actually one of your top 40 songs that you wrote. It's a beautiful song. Yeah, sing just a bar of it. How did it go?
If you have forever, does anything mean anything? If you have.
Didn't mean to cut you off, sorry. Beautiful song.
And that question was like, oh, God. It is a struggle. It really is. It's like, well, would you fall in love? Would you, you know, would you really want to create?
Right. There's no reason to do anything.
Yeah. We all know we're going to die. And that's a tough fact. Believe you me.
Well, these guys said, like, we went to the moon. Nothing was there.
That's what I'm saying. Like, do we really want to live forever? And is dying the reason why everything is really so great and beautiful?
Well, you're really bringing it up here. Read another one of your notes. Another note here. I will tell the audience as they're listening.
Two older people are sword fighting. Okay, that was a note from the Eternity of Senility. What was that place called?
Tuxedo. Something like that, yeah. The senile, the air, the... Yes, that was so weird because... Here, I have an issue with this. We didn't get to talk about it. Like, the people who were silent, the apathetics, they were just kind of like in a barn. And
they were so upsetting to me.
Yeah, they didn't even react when Sean Connery put his hand up their shirt. What'd you think of that shirt when he grabbed her by the boob like that and just started like making out with her and like really forcefully going in second base?
That was horrible.
And he threw her into a pile of hay. He threw her in a pile of hay, ready to go to town. But it was odd that he... This is the thing I wanted to talk about in the podcast that we forgot to talk about. It's better to talk to you about it. It was odd that he was surrounded by women and was never very forceful to them. But the minute he found a woman that was almost like a mannequin, he chose to like sexually molest her.
Well, he's a rapist. I mean, he is.
But that's the thing. But he's a rapist who's like picking very easy prey. Like there's other women around. He doesn't like.
Yeah, the
every
worst
woman
kind, by the way, the worst kind.
All right. So, yes. So then the old people were put into this world where they were in a constant, like 1940s jazz club, something like almost out of that Xanadu or something. There are people in tuxes, and there's like
world.
A party, but their suits are kind of like fading away, and they.
Oh my gosh! I have a great question for you. I'm so sorry to interrupt.
Yeah.
If you had to choose a world to live in this movie, if you had to choose, would you be a barbarian, one of the outlanders, or an apathetic, or in the island of senility, or whatever that weird carnival place was, or in the enlightened eternal garden, whatever.
Well, okay, first of all, great question. I'm going to ask you the same one, so please think about it. I'm surprised that you didn't offer up the bread making part thing, because there are people in that enlightened world that were just like bread makers, and then there are other people that were like much more in like.
What was the deal with the bread?
They would put in like raw dough into a hole, and then would shoot out almost immediately, like a mini golf course, but it would be big bread. And they were making a lot of bread.
Wasn't there something about like, oh, the bread is sustaining? Ugh, I don't know.
All right, well, I want to answer this question. I want to hear your answer to this question. We'll be right back.
It's 2015, and I have one question for you. Have you motherfuckers checked out Squarespace? Let me tell you, Squarespace is stepping up the game. Squarespace is the Drake of the website building world, okay? Go to squarespace.com, go to build a website button, pick out one of their beautiful templates, and go hog wild with a free trial. That's fast, it's easy, it's risk-free. Figure it out right now. Figure out what I've been talking about for years, because guys, I'm going to tell you, Squarespace is where it's at, okay? It's simple, it's free, and it's really nice looking, and they have responsive designs that look great on any device, smartphone, tablet, desktop, whatever, okay? If you want to sell something on your site, they got that covered too. You can't beat the ease and simplicity of Squarespace. You'll have a 24/7 customer online support and a beautiful website for only $8 a month. That's $8 a month, okay? You can even get a free domain name if you buy Squarespace for the year. That in itself is a great deal. So when you decide to sign up for Squarespace, make sure you use the offer code BONKERS, that's BONKERS, for 10% off your first purchase and to show your support for How Did This Get Made. That's the promo code BONKERS, BONKERS. That's Squarespace. Thank you for supporting us. We support you. Squarespace, build it beautiful.
Okay, so you asked me, where would I like to live? I'm going to answer you very simply and say that I would be an outlander, no doubt about it. Your eyes just went giant and wide. Why? The Outlanders have it the best.
Speechless.
Why? Speechless.
Who are you?
Outlanders. All right, you're putting me in this world?
Just answer honestly,
I am
please.
Being honest. Outlanders have it the best. They all right, look. They get guns. They get to run around. They get
they
to ride
rape
horses.
They rape elderly women. I honestly, like, really think about what you're saying.
I'm not saying
this
that
is
I
on
want,
public record.
I'm not saying I want to rape elderly women. I'm saying if you gave me a choice of being sexualized, desexualized, or enlightened, or just like these people at least had some energy and emotion. Basically, the Outlanders brought down the civilization because of their virility and their excitement for the world. Like the Outlanders are the heroes. You're looking at me like I'm insane. Because let me we'll answer what you think you'd like to be.
It's really hard. I don't think any are good options.
Well, of course. Okay. I wasn't saying
I
that
wish
I was...
you had said that first, though. You answered well, with was, such spirit.
I thought that was a given that none of them are good options. They're all terrible options. But in this world, it wasn't like be a doctor or a rapist. It was like be a rapist or like a person who is literally can't get an erection. Your answer.
It's tough. The enlightened it's really
people do
tough.
Have that cool ring.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe ultimately I'm an Outlander too.
But the judgment that you just gave me, and now well, you just said that you're an Outlander.
I'm thinking of myself. I'm a woman, so I have to think about that.
Okay.
So
what do you have to think about?
I have to think about as a woman what it's like to be an Outlander. All I do is get raped.
Oh wait. You're putting yourself in a position of being
caught
the rape?
In a net like an animal.
Oh, you, wait a second. That's more dark than what I. You're just saying that you just want to be the pillaged. Like, I
no,
thought you were like a female.
No, that's what I'm saying. Like, it's hard for me to conceive of being an Outlander because that's what I know my plight is. But if I'm just thinking of it as like, you know, the sort of abstraction of what it is to be an Outlander, I choose that. I definitely choose that.
I cannot believe the judgment. You gave me stone cold judgment and you picked the same, the same thing. Well, okay. Read me another note from that book.
It's hard to say the word Zardoz.
all right.
Which it is.
Say Wizard of Oz and then just kinda...
I know, but like it was really, every time I heard someone say it, every time I looked at it, I just felt nauseous.
What did you think of the Zardoz reveal? A lot was made of that.
Wizard of Oz. I still don't even really understand it.
What do you mean you don't understand
it? I know what it is, Wizard of Oz backwards.
No, it's not that. Not even that. But
Zardoz. Yes, it is.
It's Wizard of Oz backwards?
Well, what is it? I don't know. It's something like that.
It's his thumb and forefinger block the W-I.
Right.
Zardoz,
right.
Yeah.
Oh, so it's not backwards. Yeah. Right. You're right.
But wasn't it the whole metaphor, like the metaphor of that?
That there's no there?
No.
That there's no man behind the curtain?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, great. No, first of all, I apologize. I don't remember any of it.
Okay, that's fine. Want to read one more note?
I only remember feelings and sort of.
Well, we have a lot. We have some other things I want to cover with you. As a matter of fact, John Borman is going to be on this podcast.
Oh,
surprise, surprise. That's the true thing. But I want to.
The one thing I really appreciated about the movie, I really did enjoy it, even though there were lots of times I felt nauseous, but.
What did you say to me about turning off the thing?
What did I say?
We were watching it, and there's a couple of rapes, and you said, if they do anything to a child, I am not watching this anymore.
I forgot about that. I didn't write any notes about that.
Yeah, because you're ready to walk.
And they did. They did.
What did they do to a child?
There's a couple shots of dead children in this.
Okay.
And it's just too much to bear.
I hear that.
Ugh, it's too much to bear. It really is. I can't.
I don't mean to bring you down that wormhole.
I cannot. No.
All right, read another one of your notes.
I did like that there was such a commitment, and I really appreciated this, to like, okay, there's 50 different ways to vote yes. You know, the gestures that mm-hmm. those people had, like when they were taking the tally of voting to kill Zardoz mm-hmm. or not kill Zardoz, like
wait.
Everybody
Zardoz
had a weird.
Is dead.
Not Zardoz, I'm sorry.
That guy, friend.
What was his
or
name?
Or the other, yeah. The other
Monster.
Guy. Yeah.
So, you remember the scene I'm talking about
where they're
taking the vote?
Yeah.
Yeah, and they all, when they're voting yay, they all have like a different hand gesture that goes to it.
I want to just kind of pull in something with you, and so far in talking about this movie. In talking about this movie, we have talked about it in fashion. We've talked about it in grooming and hygiene. And we've talked about it in communication skills and like,
I believe I've touched on some of the larger themes of the movie.
Sure. Okay. But
so
I mean,
thank you.
I mean, I feel like a lot of them though are
and
you also liked Sean Connery's falling.
I don't remember that.
You don't remember him falling into
into the loom when he was
blind.
Well,
falling into the loom, but more falling into that like that mirrored teepee.
Oh yeah. I forgot about
when
he
kind of was like basically doing that exercise that you do with a kid where you pretend that there's stairs and you're going down into nothing because you're just bending at the knees. Like that's what he was kind of doing a lot throughout
the
movie.
Right.
All right. So look.
Well, anyway, what I was going to say is there was, I appreciated like the, there was a tone that all of the actors committed to, all of the eternal life actors, all of the apathetics, like they were all sort of in this weird, I don't know if they went through, you know, I know in Walking Dead, there's like a zombie boot camp where they shoot.
Wait. What do you mean?
I have heard from our dear friend who works on the show that all of the extras on Walking Dead have to go through essentially a camp where they learn how to walk like a zombie. Okay. And so
I thought you meant that was a plot point on
No. So there's a sort of a consistency to the way they all move.
Got it.
And how fast they move, et cetera, et cetera. And I did feel there was such a consistency in like how everybody was, like everybody in the Eternal Life group, which they just felt like they were underneath a pile of goo.
Movement, check. Mustaches, check. Clothing, check. We were knocking it all off. All right, so you like their movement. You like their group movement. They goes with their hand gestures.
Don't look at my notes. What? Don't look at my notes.
I want to just read one out of context. Let me read one of your notes out of context. Let me look at yes.
I'll read one. I love Maze Freckles.
Maze Freckle? You like somebody's freckles?
Well, I do appreciate it in a woman when they don't try to hide their freckles. When the freckles are...
Women hide freckles.
All the time.
Really?
Yeah, all day or day.
All right.
There are a lot of dermatologists who will bleach your freckles right off of you.
Really?
And so I love seeing like an actor's face like that. It's so interesting. Like she's just all freckles and...
And like loving it. Have you ever bleached a freckle off your face?
Yeah. Actually, I have.
You bleached your own freckles.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So you kind of see something in her that you couldn't.
No, because I don't have skin like that. But she has very freckly skin.
Okay,
and there's just something about that. Like most makeup artists and stuff try to hide your freckles. And
I
loved that they were. At one point I wrote, I want one of those rings.
You want one of the rings? Okay, the iPhone rings. You want one of those. Okay, now we're coming to the part of the show that everyone loves in the mini episode, but we're bringing it here to the second episode. Corrections and omissions. Hit the theme.
Ba 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 ba. You got corrections. Ba 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 ba. You got omissions. Ba 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 ba. You got corrections and omissions. Ba 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 ba.
Hey everybody, these are corrections and omissions that are sent in by our listeners who listened to Zardoz episode and thought that we might have missed things or didn't cover things as well as they wanted to cover them. So let's begin with them. All right, so this is a correction that Rossini138 brought up to me. I said that on the commentary track, John Borman speaks about using Irish travelers and they were very good extras, the best extras he's ever used. And I thought they were just tourists that were visiting Ireland. I was mistaken. They're gypsies. He used gypsies as extras. So everybody that you see in those scenes, and most of the extras are Irish gypsies. Like, and if you don't know what that is, like think about Snatch, Brad Pitt's character in Snatch. And so this person brings up here that stereotypically, they're not good workers, which is why the director would even mention it. So he basically used these like kind of Irish gypsies to fill in everything. So those people who did great movement were out of Snatch.
Irish gypsies, okay.
All right. And then I want to bring up this. All right, so we talked a little bit about why Sean Connery did this movie. Now, somebody brought up to me that this was Sean Connery's favorite movie. He's been quoted on record saying this is his favorite movie that he's ever done, which is amazing. And also, the reason why he took this role was he was so sick of being offered the Bond role and hated the Bond character so much that he took this absurd role to distance himself and make himself no longer appealing as a Bond man. The Bond stereotype was killing the roles that he was being offered, and he wanted to distance himself from Bond so badly that putting on a giant red diaper and raping women was the perfect role to jump into. That was submitted by Art. I don't know if Sean Connery would say that exactly, but... interesting nonetheless, but that the Bond role had kind of killed him. Sadly, he returned to the Bond role after this movie in one of the saddest James Bond movies of all time with Kim Basinger, called Never Say Never Again. Oh, so upsetting. Okay, I want to also read you this. Somebody broke down some of the big questions that we had here, and I don't know if you're interested in all, in this, but okay. You ready for this?
Yep.
Okay. Oh, Henry brings up, anyone know enough about guns to tell if those bullets in Sean Connery's bandoliers would ever fit in his revolver, or are they just completely useless? It doesn't make sense. His bandolier had very large bullets, but his gun seemed very small.
Well, there's also like the same, I don't know, I can't remember if you guys brought it up or not, like the same shot of the guns being regurgitated by the floating head was used over and over again.
Oh, yeah, in the beginning. They recycled it. Yeah, definitely. Also, somebody gets my back here, Bumpy, regarding the skeleton couples. There have been several interesting finds at Pompeii of two people holding hands.
I knew together. That was true, and thank you and for that made my me back. Sad.
It made you sad?
Yeah.
Just people dying together, like not alone?
Oh, God, it's too much to think about.
Now, I want to talk about, so this person... Two people really broke down a lot of the movies. So describe what you think the crystals were. Like, what were the crystals?
Don't remember.
Okay. That was like the thing in the ring. It was like the ring.
Oh, weren't they just like the all of the knowledge in the world and enlightenment?
Well, all right. So Crumbcake sent in a breakdown of the movie. He describes what the crystals meant. He describes what the tabernacle was. He tries to do, and I'm saying he, I'm sorry, Cupcake could be a woman. Describe everything.
Yeah.
Okay. I caught myself. So June, why don't you take the first one and describe what the crystals are? Go ahead.
Brain emissions refract low wavelength laser light passing through the crystal brain in a code sent to you for interpretation and storage. Yes or no? End quote.
Let's say yes.
Okay. Now, I'm not saying this is good science, but it does at least explain the crystals. That is, they're pretty much servers, only instead of binary, they store data in refractive light patterns. Apparently, their scientists developed a way to read thoughts by interpreting the interference brainwaves have on a low-wave laser light embedded inside a crystal implanted near the front of their brains. All these thoughts and knowledge are stored and shared in a central network so that in the vortex, quote, man and the sum of his knowledge will never die but go forward to perfection.
I just feel like I was in a college class and I zoned out so hard. I was following it and then I stopped. Does it make any sense? Is it just like, did you figure it out?
Well, apparently their scientists developed a way to read
I don't know.
Thoughts.
That's still, I mean, it. I mean,
by interpreting the interference brainwaves.
By the way, it's not Cupcake, it's Crumbcake. Crumbcake did a good job at
describing
something.
So it's definitely
something.
He if it's a Crumbcake and not a Cupcake.
You think so?
Yeah.
That's sexist. All right, let's move on. Let's move on to the other parts that he has brought up here because I feel like that one's a tough one.
By
to
the way, a good Crumbcake is hard to come by and I want one right now.
Okay, let's talk about if looks can kill.
I believe that actually for me was one of the things in the movie in terms of like, oh, the futuristic element and what is available then, you know, that I thought, oh, we're headed that way.
You want us all being a crystal?
No, we're headed toward those rings.
Okay, because this thing brings up the tabernacle. He's like, if the crystals are the network, the tabernacle is the main database holding the sum of all their knowledge. He says, so it stores the DNA and the memories, explaining that while they're always stuck at the same age, when the vortex was begun, they'd stop their aging. They stored that information in the tabernacle. Now, when any of them dies, the tabernacle registers that and begins growing a new clone to match that person's stored record. That's why the middle-age founders are stuck at that age. So basically, they fed everything into a computer, and that's why everyone's
so
there.
So if you're punished by... So if your punishment is aging a few years, mm-hmm. then... How old can people be there?
Well, I think that you are stuck at the age that you were born. Or the age that they kind of froze you in amber.
Yes, but then you can be punished by aging a couple of years.
That, I don't understand how that works.
Because then it would seem that there could be people there who are very, very old. And we only saw, we saw elderly people, but nothing outrageous.
Right. Yeah, you're right. Well, I don't know how to answer that.
I don't even know what that would look like.
Well, I don't even know how to debate or discuss that. then the timeline correction. It says, some people already brought up how 300 years of immortality seems like a short time to reach a state of crushing ennui, but it's even crazier than that. They discovered that either there are no answers to the mysteries of the universe, or that human minds can simply not comprehend them. But either way, they've reached that point in their knowledge where the only reason they haven't admitted that life is meaningless is because you can't prove a negative. No wonder they're begging for death. Though 300 years is still a relatively short time to reach that conclusion. That was pretty depressing.
Really depressing.
And that's all from Crumb Cake. You can read more about his laser ring. I couldn't really encapsulate that. And then this is okay. This is a breakdown of the entire movie. All right. So this is the, if you don't remember Zardoz, Cameron H. breaks down the whole movie. Okay. Here it is. Zardoz's plan with Connery was not only to make him genetically superior, but also intellectually superior to everyone else in the world. Having read an entire library of literature, he made him the only person on Earth with free will and the ability to think critically. Zardoz knows that despite the Eternals' elevated caste position, they are still a bunch of sheep. Basically, Zed has a degree in liberal arts, that's what I'm saying, and Zed sees that the world is a lie. Now he's an intellectual barbarian, which I guess is what Borman felt the ideal man was. In other words, humanity needs to strive for knowledge, but also needs to embrace its barbaric animal side. So once Zed gets into the vortex, he thinks, yep, just as I thought, it's all bullshit, and destroys the tabernacle, which grants the Eternals their immortality. Freed of this constraint and finally embracing the pleasures of sex, the Eternals now can experience joy, pain, and the sweet release of death. For the first time in their lives, they're stripped of the security blanket of a guaranteed resurrection and see death as the mystery that it is. Now, I don't know why the Eternals can't just destroy the tabernacle themselves. Maybe it's out of fear. Maybe it's because they wouldn't be committing suicide, but also murder. Maybe their moral code dictated that since destroying the tabernacle would result in everyone's death, that some may not actually want that. It was just something they wouldn't want to even think about doing. In any case, Zed has been the catalyst to decide for them what they wanted. It was Zardoz's plan from the jump. So that's a pretty good specific way, because people are like, what the fuck is that movie about?
I guess it does. I think the thing that's also successful about the movie is it does make you think.
Yeah, it does make you think.
It does. I swear. I mean, I remember right after I saw the movie, I thought, wow, we are really, I mean, and this writer in her points it out. We have come very far from our animal selves.
And we want to get back to that.
Well,
we need
I would say no, but I would say that sex is probably the only thing that people are really in touch with being animals. Other than that, do you think we're in touch with being our animal selves?
Yeah, we need a Zed.
No, I don't think we need a Zed, but I'm just saying it's interesting to think about. Well, we don't really hunt for food. We don't. Yeah. Other people do, you know. We are safe and
you really
feel protected. No, it's an interesting.
I agree with you. All right. Well, we'll take one more break and we will come right back.
Here's the deal. You're a hairy man. You got to buy those stupid, expensive razors. You got to go to the store. You got to ask the guy to open up the glass case. It's a pain in your ass. Disposable razors? Come on. Don't get me started. I wish there was an easier way. Oh, there is, my friend. It's called Harry's. All right, if you want a clean, nice, close shave with an amazing razor, you need to get on the Harry's train, okay? They send you amazing razors for the fraction of the price that you're paying right now. And it gets delivered to your door on a schedule, so you don't have to like wake up one morning and go, oh shit, I got the Fu Manchu and I have a big meeting today. I got to run out to the 7-Eleven. No. They get you on a schedule. They treat you right. They treat your face the way that you want to treat it. Okay. And I'm talking about high quality German engineered blades that are crafted for sharpness. We all know the Germans do shit right. Except for one time when they did stuff wrong, but we won't get into that. So go to Harry's.com now, and Harry's will give you $5 off your first purchase if you use the offer code HOW. That's H-O-W. Okay. How, H-O-W, go to Harry's, H-A-R-R-Y-S.com. Enter the coupon code HOW at checkout for $5 off. Start shaving smarter today. Hey, everybody, time to take a break in the show and talk about something that's really important to me, our sponsors. That's right. I love talking about sponsors, so let's get to it.
Boom! Here we go. Guys, your apartment looks like shit. Your house? Oh, come on. You call that art? You're a pig. You need to step it up, and you need to get on board with Framebridge. What's Framebridge? Oh, you don't know? Okay. Framebridge is basically a place that frames your art for 70% cheaper than the normal framing stores. And it's a whole heck more convenient because you don't have to talk to that guy with the weird mustache and the fanny pack and that cell phone holster, okay? This place, say you got a piece, like an awesome Mondo, you know, piece of art, you know, like a cool, I don't know, Blade Runner poster or something like that. Framebridge has got you covered. They'll send you a sturdy prepaid package. You pack it up in, you send it to them, they'll frame it and send it back. Not only will they save you time and money, but they'll also make sure that your art stays pristine and safe. It gets back to your door, framed by experts and ready to hang. No assembly, no resizing, zero repeat trips to the store, and a whole bunch of frames to choose from, okay? Whether it's a cute little picture of your pet or an extra large frame to show off your most prized artwork that your brother gave you that you don't really like but people say is kind of cool, Framebridge is the place for you. Framebridge, it's convenient, it's affordable, it's custom, okay? So go to framebridge.com, use the discount code HOW, that's H-O-W, for 15% off your first order. That's H-O-W for 15% off at framebridge.com. Think about it. You have a poster at home. You want to frame it and make it look good. Go there. Don't go to those stupid stores in the mall.
Okay, we are back. Our interview with John Borman is coming, but I wanted to play this other little clip for you guys. This is actually a clip to advertise this movie on the radio. They used Rod Serling from The Twilight Zone to kind of, I guess, get you into the idea that this movie is fucking batshit crazy. So this is an original Rod Serling radio ad for Zardoz, which is amazing. Take a listen.
Welcome to paradise.
As Eternals achieved total consciousness, sleep became obsolete.
The Brutal is now in fourth hour of unconscious sleep.
Beyond 2001.
All this technology was for travel to the distant stars. Another dead end.
20th Century Fox presents a John Borman film.
Zardoz! How did we conjure up a monster in our midst?
Replay his last memory moments.
Continuation of the trial of George Seddon of Vortex 4.
I am innocent of psychic violence.
For this you will be aged 50 years, no less.
And in the end, Zardoz recreated man.
Vote, please.
Rated R, under 17, not admitted without parent.
All right, so we are coming down to the end of the podcast. June, you really went deep with me here. People, I think, are going
to
be
very happy. I think you sort of were shying away from the bigger questions at Zardoz.
Ask me a big question. I'll answer it. I'll answer any question you got. What do you got? I mean, yeah, you brought up some pretty interesting points of view. You any other clothing? Wig work. How is the wig work?
Great. You know, great. I think overall I loved the look of the movie, even though I hated it because it reminded me of like movies I would have to sit there and watch.
And even though some of the outfits were uncomfortable to ride horses with.
Yeah, but I think like it's such a sort of, I don't know. It's so itself, this movie.
I want to talk about one thing before we play this John Borman thing. Like that whole idea that like, oh, they need to be free and then they could like live their own life. But it just seemed like at the very end, they had such little time to live their life before they were all brutally murdered by the barbarians. I mean, many of them were just fucking straight out and then getting shot in the head. Like that was like, I wish they had like a little bit more time. I guess they didn't need more time.
Well, are you saying that they weren't living at all when they were living their eternal lives?
Yeah. So I feel like they should have had like maybe a day of it and still.
What do you think they should have done?
Well, just have a moment. I mean, these people are dying like
they were,
in coitus.
Well, they were begging for
like,
it.
They're going to, when they find their bones, it's going to be like doing it doggy style. It's going to be like doggy style bones in Pompeii in the Outland. All right. Well, I'll ask the question that we asked at the end of our podcast when you weren't there, which is, what do you think the sun is going off to do? Zed's son and Charlotte Rampling's son. Rampling, sorry.
Well, I actually thought that, you know, I know this, the sort of synopsis we just read disputes this, but I thought the son was the one who was supposed to be sort of the perfect intellectual barbarian.
Well, maybe, I mean, but maybe he is. I mean, maybe, I guess, but where is he going to go? Because there's no more world. They're in a cave. So is he going to go out there now as a man and not get I didn't understand where he was going. It was like, I guess the idea was that's Adam and Eve and that's their son. But then who's that
Jesus
son?
Jesus Christ.
Is it Jesus Christ? All right. Let's just say it's Jesus Christ. Now, Ricky Carmichael, or sorry, actually I'm mispronouncing his name. His name is Ricky Camilleri, is a reporter for HuffPo Live. And when this episode, the first one, actually aired, it was a coincidence that he was having John Borman on the show the same day that that we had just released this episode. And he asked me to submit a question to John Borman, which I did. And I sent it in as a video. And now you can hear my question to John Borman about Zardoz. It's a loose question about Zardoz because I also felt like I didn't want to come hard at him with a Zardoz question. I didn't know
was
where
it
he
was. About bras or any sort of support wear?
It was not about support wear. It was not about the costuming. I would have saved that for the HuffPost Live special with the costume designer. No, this is, I asked a question. You'll hear what my question is. But it was me and John Borman got to talk. And I actually think got to talk about something even more interesting than Zardoz to a certain extent. So here
when
is.
When did this happen?
What?
When did this happen?
Last week. You gotta keep up with me. You follow me on social media?
No, I don't. I don't.
You gotta get on my. what do you want? You on Snapchat?
No, I'm not on Snapchat.
Get on Snapchat. Come on, get on Snapchat. I'm on the Snapchat.
I don't know what you do out there. Okay, let's.
All right, this is me getting to ask John Borman a question. And again, I didn't want to be too creepy about it, so I asked kind of an easy softball question. All right, let's take a listen.
How hard was it to convince Sean Connery to wear a wedding dress in that scene in Zardoz?
Okay. Now, Sean, you know, was a very—he's a very courageous actor. He was. Didn't work for a bit now, but getting old. But
he's also notoriously temperamental.
Yes, but you know, I've never ever had any problem with actors.
Yeah.
Because the only actors only make problems when they feel insecure.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to the thing to do is it's like when it making in Deliverance, I'd say to the actors, okay, now here we are. You get in the canoes and you go down that cataract, and make it sound very ordinary, mm-hmm. naturally. And
this dangerous cataract. Go ahead.
So they just get in the canoes and go down there. You know, I'll be shooting from over here, and they kind of do it. You know. And so I said to Sean, you wear a wedding dress in this scene, okay? Here it is. Put it on. So you want me in that thing?
There it is.
yes, I do, yeah. And with the veil and everything, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the most important question has been answered. How did Sean Connery get in that wedding dress? And it surprising. I think it would be a lot more convincing, but it seemed like he was just a very like forward director, like Michael Bay's school of directing. Just like, you're going to wear a wedding dress. And Sean Connery is like, all right, I'll do it. You wrote in one of your notes, Sean Connery in a wedding dress. I saw that.
Yeah, I did. Well, I mean, Jason brought this up. It's like this idea of like, there's these men in these movies are so masculine, so like hyper masculine that they can put dresses on and it's just hilarious because it's so out of the realm of the world that we know. So it's like there's nobody's concerned about, nobody really thinks his masculinity is being challenged because he's in a dress.
You're rolling your eyes. Your eyes almost
No, I'm saying that's sort of the spirit of like him, so, in this dress in this movie is the spirit of like Arnold Schwarzenegger in a dress.
So he's just saying, fuck it, no one will ever question if I'm like gay because
exactly.
I'm like, I go fuck. I will cut a dick hole out of here and just fuck in this wedding
exactly.
dress. You know, like I hope this wedding dress doesn't get grossed out by my ball hair because it's all over the place. All right, this is Zardoz Part 2. Thank you, June, for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
So great. And a reminder to get your tickets for that live show at CineFamily. Just go to CineFamily.com. Me hosting a screening of Ghostbusters. I hope you will join me. I have brought some cool stuff, some clips and stuff that you guys can check it out. So in LA, CineFamily, check it out. Go to their website. Search for me. Whatever you do. That's it. We're never going to talk about Zardoz again, so don't leave any corrections and omissions for this episode. We don't care. We're done with it.
Do I get to plug a few things?
You want to plug something? Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I want to plug the season finale. I'm in the season finale of Marry Me on NBC. And if you haven't seen it yet, check out Ask Backwards. It's on iTunes, Netflix.
Should I plug something else? Should I plug Fresh Off the Boat, a new show that I'm on ABC?
It's
check
great.
It out.
I love that show.
It's great. And you can watch Fresh Off the Boat, and then you can switch a channel and watch Marry Me. They're on the same night, different times.
Just DVR both of them.
Well, you got really upset about that. You can switch. I'm telling people to switch back and forth. Enjoy it.
Okay.
Not during the same time slot.
These are competing plugs.
All right. We'll see you next time for an official mini episode, which maybe I can get June to join me on. Well, we'll see. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
This has been an Earwolf Media production. Executive producers Jeff Ulrich and Scott Aukerman. For more information, visit earwolf.com.
Earwolf Radio, boom.com. Ow, ow, ow. The wolf dead.